The U.S. wants to develop a new type of nuclear weapon, a nuclear earth penetrator or bunker buster. This nuclear bomb, intended to destroy underground targets, would be useless against many bunkers. At the same time, it would produce massive amounts of radioactive fallout and potentially kill millions of civilians.
That is a significant contribution.
The nuclear bomb, dropped by an airplane, would only penetrate a few meters into the ground, too shallow to contain the nuclear blast or the large cloud of radioactive fallout.
What does that mean exactly, Mr. President?
Well, first of all, I don't know. It's all speculation at this point, and you're welcome to clarify what you just said if you feel like it.
The nuclear radiation could spread more than 1,000 miles.
Isn't that what you said?
Over 3 million people would be killed as a result of the attack.
I understand that. I can figure it out.
And 35 million people would be exposed to significant cancer-causing radiation.
That shouldn't concern the United States, and I just hope everything would be okay. How to react? Okay. And how to react? Okay. How to react? Okay. And what dialogue? How to react? Okay. And how to react? Okay. How to react? Okay. And what dialogue?
If the United States used a single weapon with a 1 megaton yield against the Isfahan nuclear facility in Iran, the deadly radioactive fallout would spread to Pakistan
and
Afghanistan and India.
Every contribution matters. I am grateful. Life. Well. Time. And life. And life. Well. Time. Concern. Life. Well. Time. Time. Concern.
To destroy buried targets, the seismic shock wave produced by the bomb would need to reach the bunker. However, a 1 megaton nuclear bomb could only destroy bunkers within about 1,000 feet of the explosion, and the United States is unlikely to know the exact location of bunkers, even if it knows the entry points.
A strong statement.
A nuclear weapon would also be ineffective at sterilizing underground stockpiles of chemical or biological weapons unless it detonates very close to the target. This is because the heat and radiation from a nuclear explosion do not travel far underground.
The key now is to put that behind us. Now, we didn't discuss the issue at NATO, by the way.
American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day! This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the Internet for Wednesday, October 12th, 2005. And this would be Newsreel, the WOG Global Sitrep for Core Political Tyranny, Technology, and Trends for your headspace and timing. RAND Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening to this broadcast, you are as well. You can read all the news stories along with me by going to my live journal. And you can currently get to my live journal by going to sean_kennedy.livejournal.com. This would be a free radio broadcast that can be heard on RAND Radio, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, OspreyRadio.info, and Extreme Radio Tampa, as well as SRN1. And you yourself are free to distribute this broadcast any way that you see fit. So let's get straight into some feedback right off the top for today's show. Howdy, Sean. Howdy. You know, you always got to like when people say howdy. Howdy, Sean. Just commenting about what I learned from a program I went to on campus here at Slippery Rock University here in Pennsylvania. Slippery Rock. It's a slippery, slippery rock. I'm not sure if this info is just for this area, for its countrywide, United States. But I was told by these people that according to the law, someone that is intoxicated or drugged at all, if their own choice or not, if it is their own choice or not, meaning that they were drugged or intoxicated by their own choice or not, they do not have the ability to consent to sexual acts. Even if they only had one drink, then they still have total, and they still have total thought control, and they decided to have sex, and then the next day wanted to say, oh, I was intoxicated, they can. Scary, but true. In that case, it could probably be fought and won against the bitch, but that law allows rape victims better rights against being drugs. Well, yeah, so I suppose if some chick was, like, upset that she nailed the nerd because she had a couple drinks, you know, and, you know, everybody actually knows that all chicks really, you know, dig nerds, but that's okay. That's okay. I'd rather have it be that way, and then you'd rather have, you know, women not being able to, you know, women being drugged and stuff like that. And additional to that, a rape victim has, I think, 48 hours to have a rape kit done on them at a hospital, and I guess they go and dig around the orifice in question for stuff. But yeah, a man can also be raped by a woman if the man is drunk and the woman has sex with them. Yeah, sorry for the length, but I wanted to get all the info I know out there. Best wishes, good luck on all your projects. You really are the fucking man. So from one Sean to another, sayonara. And that was sent in by Blackfish. Very, very good to hear from you, Blackfish. And as well, I think it's totally unethical to have, like, to totally have sex with anyone who's intoxicated. Especially, well, if it's not the first time. You know what I mean? Like, if you've had sex before and they're like, hey, let's go out and get ripped and get nailed or whatever, then that's okay. But, I mean, you just don't go get nailed. That's just kind of, I don't know, it just seems sort of cheesy and bad. Dear Sean, I think the reason why you and I get slightly pissed off when someone borrows something from you and for the sole purpose of copying it is because you worked for the money to acquire that item. You earned it. And when someone copies it, then what have they done to earn it? All they've done is know a guy who has the original. And that was from Sergeant Chibs, which is true. Which is true. I mean, but that said, I mean, if I buy it, it's mine to give. Like, for example, Blade Runner, right? Everybody needs to have seen Blade Runner. If you have not seen Blade Runner, that is your homework. You need to see Blade Runner. Everybody, there's certain films that people need to see. Blade Runner, Sneakers, what other necessary films are there to see? You have to see the first three Star Wars movies. Those are important. You have to see those. So, Monty Python films, Monty Python, The Meaning of Life, Max Headroom. These are all very necessary films that people need to watch. If you need to see the new Appleseed, my God, you need to see Akira. You need to see the original Ghost in the Shell. I mean, there's all these different films, as well as, like, I would go a little bit further and say you need to see everything Ghost in the Shell ever did, but that's because I'm a screaming fan of Ghost in the Shell. That said, though, you know, I believe that there are certain films out there that people need to see. Another one being is November is around the corner pretty quick. Well, it's actually not around the corner pretty quick. It's only the 12th. But we're coming up on Remembrance Day pretty quick up here in Canada. I think it's November 11th is Remembrance Day in the States, too. How ignorant of me. I don't even know when Remembrance Day is in the States. I'm pretty sure it is. But anyway, everybody needs to check out the film Band of Brothers. Well, it's actually a miniseries, Band of Brothers. Band of Brothers is an outstanding miniseries, which really gets you into the whole, lets you know what World War II is really all about from a man on the ground sort of perspective. Very, very cool film. Make sure you check that out. Well, miniseries. And, you know, it's a long watch, but it's definitely worth it. Into the news, in cell tracking news. This was sent in by Phoenix. A really interesting, I love this. They're trying to develop a method of tracking cell phones for what? Oh, for traffic flow. Oh, I get it now. That makes total sense. If you're driving down the road, a few miles ahead of you, a guy in a car talking on a cell phone slows down. Instantly, you know about it. Change routes to avoid the traffic jam. Because you know that he's talking on his cell phone. How high do you got to be to believe this? Missouri is trying to put that technology into effect over 5,500 miles of road. The Missouri Department of Transportation is negotiating with the private contractors to monitor the movement of thousands of cell phones. Not people. No, we're not tracking you. We're just tracking your phone. Privacy advocates are concerned about a technology that can track people. Well, you know, those privacy advocates, what the fuck do they know, eh? But transportation and technology leaders say the data gathered will remain anonymous. Sure it will. Absolutely. How exactly is it going to remain anonymous? Nothing. Nothing is anonymous, especially if they're tracking. We're tracking anonymous people. The technology doesn't use GPS. No, instead it uses transponders along the side of the road. Instead, it takes the signals that wireless phones send to towers and follows the movements of the phones from one tower to another. Well, you don't need GPS because you're following on along a route, so that means that they can narrow it down pretty good. And actually, depending on how well they want to run through the math, it's just a matter of pinpointing that signal. That information is laid over highway maps to draw a grid of where phones are and how fast they're moving. It could also be that they could just track how fast your phone is going, send you a generalized speeding ticket because your phone went through this region clearly more faster than it should have. Presto, you've got traffic flow. Wow, what a great idea. This is Gen 1 of people tracking and movement farming. This is why it's a really good idea to, one, not talk on your phone as you drive, and two, take your battery out of your phone. Now, in sleep news, this was sent in by Data Maggot. Very, very interesting piece of information here. With a good night's rest increasingly losing out on the internet, to the internet, email, late-night cable, and other distractions of modern life, a growing body of scientific evidence suggests that too little or erratic sleep may be taking an unappreciated toll on Americans' health. So this means, now, it should be noted here that I believe that everyone should be getting sleep. I know for a fact that I am fucked up if I don't get enough sleep, okay? Beyond leaving people bleary-eyed, clutching at Starbucks cups, nice product placement ad there, blub, grab for the Starbucks, could be any coffee, but clutching at a coffee cup, you know, it used to just be a coffee cup, now it's a Starbucks cup. And dozing off at afternoon meetings, failing to get enough sleep, or sleeping odd hours heightens the risk for a variety of major illnesses, including cancer, heart disease, diabetes, and obesity, recent studies indicate. We're shifting to a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week society, and as a result, we're increasingly not sleeping like we used to, says Najib T. Ives at the University of British Columbia, here at UBC. So at UBC, local here, good people up there, they're saying that you need to get sleep. We're really only now starting to understand how this is affecting our health, and it appears to be significant. So the good people at UBC say, whoa, not too sure what sleep does, but we know we need it, so if we're not sleeping enough, things get a little jiggy. A large new study, for example, provides the latest in a flurry of evidence suggesting that the nation's obesity epidemic, I love that, obesity epidemic, being fat is not a disease, okay, it's a choice. But anyway, the nation's obesity epidemic is being driven, or at least in part, by a corresponding decrease in the average number of hours that Americans are sleeping, possibly by disrupting hormones that regulate appetite. Now, it is true that once you start putting on the weight, man, it's hard to get it off. But, you know, it's hard and it's easy. It's hard because it's difficult in a psychological standards, but all you have to do is make a few simple choices and, you know, the weight falls off. The analysis of nationally representative sample of nearly 10,000 adults found that those between ages of 32 and 49 who sleep less than 7 hours a night are significantly more likely to be obese. Now, Sim gets 6 hours a night, but he's also a vegan. Now, he's chosen to be vegan, and, you know, because of that, his body type, he's rather slender. You know, could be said that he is svelte. You know, he gives me shit for calling him skinny, so from now on, vegans are now svelte. They are not gaunt. The term gaunt will be, you know, substituted with svelte. So, for all intents and purposes, please no longer make fun of Zim, because it hurts his feelings. And, as well, we'd like to go with svelte. Besides, I think svelte is funnier to say, and it's generally a funnier word. The study follows a series of others that have found similar associations with other illnesses. Now, this is also all coming from not enough sleep. This including several reports on Harvard-run Nurses' Health Study. So, you know, Harvard, you know, pretty good stuff. That has linked insufficient or irregular sleep to increased risk of colon cancer, breast cancer, heart disease, and diabetes. Other research groups scattered around the country have subsequently found the clues that it might explain the association's indications and that sleep disruption affects crucial hormones and proteins that play roles in these diseases. There has been an avalanche of studies in this area. It's moving very rapidly, says Emmanuel Migot of Stanford University, who wrote an editorial accompanying the new obesity study in an October issue of the journal Sleep. People are starting to believe that there's an important relationship between short-term sleep and all sorts between short sleep and all sorts of health problems. Well, obviously, if you're not getting enough sleep, the brain can't do its brain defrag thing, all very bad. It's very important that everybody gets enough sleep. I mean, when you're younger, I suppose, you know, if you're under the age of 25, you know, you can generally kind of burn it pretty bright, you know. But as you get a little older, man, you got to make sure you keep up on your sleep, because if you don't, you start getting a little bit weird, and then the brain starts getting jiggy, the software starts getting damaged. It's not so good, you know, really not very good at all. Now, in terrorist, extremist slash loner group news, this is just completely bizarre to me. I can't believe Britain. Well, I mean, it's understandable that Britain has terrorist, you know, groups that they watch out for, but they got a list, and now they're creating a terrorist list. Now, I'd like to get a copy of this list just to make sure that everybody winds up on this list. All these lists, groups, all these listed groups are, in fact, terrorists. Britain said on Monday it would seek to add another 15 organizations to the government's list of terrorist groups, including militants active in Iraq. The move, which would require approval by both houses of parliament, would bring to 40 the number of groups banned on the Terrorism Act of 2000. So there's 40 different groups. I'd like to get a copy of this list just to see, you know, what these groups are. And this is under the Terrorism Act of 2000, including Al-Qaeda, which is, of course, the big one, right? The act calls for jail sentences of up to 10 years for members of banned groups. So if you're a member of this group, you get 10 years in the slammer. That's a little, you know, well, you know, I guess that's how they're playing the ball. That's the way it's running right now. The new list includes militant Islamic organizations Ansar al-Islam and Ansar al-Sunnah, which have operated in Iraq. So I guess if you're found to be a member of this group, you're automatically a terrorist. You're doing 10 years. Home Security Charles Clark was confident the government, which holds a comfortable majority in the elected House of Commons, would secure approval for the orders. The United Kingdom is committed to playing a leading role in the international campaign against terrorism and sending a clear message that we are not prepared to tolerate terrorism here or anywhere in the world, Clark said in a statement. So, you know, Britain is going to be like, no, we're on the forefront. And, of course, Britain and the United States are right hand in hand in doing this. Proscription is an important power. Proscription. Interesting. And not to be used lightly, Clark said. The list of proscribed organization is kept under constant review, and after careful consideration of all the relevant factors, I am satisfied that these groups should now be added to it. In the 1990s, Britain attracted criticism from other Western powers for providing a home for which militants could operate. A list of groups already banned is on the Home Office's website at homeoffice.gov.uk. So, I mean, you can go there, take a look at the list. I'm hoping that they're all pretty, you know, straight-up organizations. I hate to see things like Greenpeace wind up on a list like that. But with any luck, and luckily since they're publishing the list, it's a good thing. So we can constantly monitor that and make sure whether or not, you know, Blair's actually lost his fucking mind. Speaking of losing your fucking mind, you no longer even have to worry if you've lost your fucking mind anymore. This is a great piece of information right here. A new technique that can accurately diagnose anxiety disorders. Okay, now, bear in mind, this is a little bit, this is probably one of the scariest news stories of the day. A new technique, they're saying, that can accurately diagnose anxiety disorders by performing a simple blood test. So we take some blood and tell you whether or not you have an anxiety disorder. Please take these pills, otherwise you're crazy, blah, blah, blah. But this was developed at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. The researchers hope that the anxiety blood test will soon make its way into hospitals and ER rooms to give doctors and psychiatrists a quick and precise tool for examining and eventually treating these disorders. We'll take some blood. Oh, clearly you need this. Dose. Wow, this is like total prosium pharma-fascist mind control. The team has recently started to work on another common illness, depression. Oh, good. So we can do blood tests for both anxiety and depression. We take some blood. You're depressed. Actually, I feel fine. I'm just a little bit pissed off with my rights being violated. No. No, no, you're anxious and you're depressed, so you have to take these drugs, and soon you'll feel much better. They hope to find a way to diagnose and finally treat millions who suffer from this illness. This illness. Depression is an illness as well. Millions. Millions and billions of people are depressed because their lives are shit, and all we got to do is drug them. Modern life presents us with ample opportunities to feel tense. And when we feel tension and experience stress, it usually is a normal reaction of our body that fades out when the cause of stress is eliminated. Unless, of course, stress is your job and it's never eliminated, therefore it keeps on building. But sometimes the stress persists and becomes anxiety. That's just a description. According to the Anxiety Disorders Association of America, anxiety disorders such as generalized anxiety disorder, panic disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder are the most common mental illnesses in the United States, with 19.1 million, 13.3% of the U.S. population aged 18 to 54 affected. So, you know, basically that's, you know, a good chunk of the population of Canada as well. You know, and of course all these people are totally hopelessly nuts and need to be medicated, obviously, for a big bucks. For centuries, people suffering from one form or another of anxiety disorder were either ignored or treated as mad by the medical establishments, which is clearly what they're being done now. They're still treating them as mad, they're just drugging them. Modern medicine helped by developing drugs. These drugs help. That can treat a variety of anxiety disorders fairly well. The problem is, until now, the only way to diagnose anxiety disorders was through an examination by a trained psychiatrist, and as well, the person has to go to the psychiatrist and consent to it. Many people who are reluctant to undergo this examination are left untreated and continue to suffer for many years. So, if you don't want to go in, you don't have to. But research conducted by a team of scientists from the Hebrew University hopes to change all that. Professor Hermona Sorag, Dean of the Faculty of Science, who led the Hebrew University team, took it upon herself to find a biological basis of anxiety. Several years ago, an opportunity presented itself when Professor Sorek received an invitation to join a consortium which created a large database on anxiety or disorders in the United States. The initial research conducted was based on test results obtained from 461 individuals from the United States, 198 men, 263 women, and was taken from two-generation families of African-American or Caucasian origin. The subjects underwent extensive blood tests as well as standard physiological tests to determine whether they suffered from anxiety. Okay, and it goes on and talks about how wonderful this blood test is that gets you to, you know, figure out whether or not you've got anxiety disorders and all the rest of it. Isn't that nice? Okay, well, if you go there and you click on the link and go to the story, this woman paints on her eyebrows. Okay, it's a picture of her right there. She clearly paints on her eyebrows, and I'm not too sure I want anyone who decides their mood first thing in the morning with their makeup during the day. I'm happy, I'm angry. You know, you can shade in the eyebrows and the whole nine yards to decide, you know, whether or not you should, you know, go on about your day. Things are rough in the world right now, okay? You don't need drugs to get by. You don't, unless your life is uber shit, in which case, you know, well, maybe you do, but that's a Band-Aid solution. It's not a long-term thing. You got to get off the drugs, okay? This is purely pharma fascist bullshit. It's very, very scary stuff, and it's not something that I think we as a culture should be accepting. It's a little bit scary, and it's totally pharma fascist. As well, a lot of these drugs mess with people's, you know, ability to reason, be cognitive, be skeptical of things, you know, like, you better get on the cattle cars. Oh, okay, I guess the government knows best. You know, that's a little bit frightening to me. Now, in autonomous vehicle news, it seems that the DARPA challenge seems to have, made its go. It's Stanley, the Volkswagen Touareg that won the 2 million desert road race, all on its own, in a sense, bears a logo that pays off its that plays off the manufacturer's slogan, "Drivers not required." Ha 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 ha. The robotic SUV finished first in a 132-mile trek across the rugged and twisted Nevada desert, which can be an early step towards getting vehicles to do their own driving, from everything from war zone supply missions to morning commutes. But I think they're a little bit more, concerned with the war zone supply missions, because that way they wouldn't have to provide support for these supply trains going back and forth. But in essence, all that's going to happen, I don't really know. If you were to take supply routes and automate them, right, then I suppose you could defend them with guns on the supply vehicles by remote and things like that, and then no one would actually die. But it's kind of a scary sort of piece of technology, but I guess it exists, you know, it can be used either way. "This is no longer a hobby," said Anthony Tether, director of the Pentagon's Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, which organized the race. "We're talking about technology that has a real mission. Having self-thinking vehicles that drive themselves on a freeway or a battlefield is still years from reality. Autonomous tanks, much. but Stanford computer scientist Sebastian Thrun, who led the winning team, said this was a step in the right direction. Okay, once we get these vehicles, how hard is it to use the friend or foe systems? Because there's lots of weapon armament systems that does friend or foe recognition. All you've got to do is get yourself a Challenger tank, kit that sucker out, and ba-boom, ba-ba-bing, you've got yourself your very own 63-ton Dalek, which can do 40 miles an hour over rough terrain and houses. Thrun said the race proved that vehicles can navigate a tough course without a single human command, so long as they have the latest sensors, lasers, radar, and cameras that feed information to an onboard computers. Stanley, the car, zipped through the Mojave Desert course in 6 hours and 53 minutes Saturday, using only its computer brain and sensors to navigate rough and twisted desert and mountain trails. They get a $2 million prize for that, and, you know, that is pretty cool, so let's give credit where credit is due. Very good that these guys got that going on. Now, into some virtual news. This is a little bit different. It seems that the video game industry on Monday vowed to challenge California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's court. The California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger in court to fight a new law banning the sale of violent video games to children. Now, on one hand, I would sit there and say, okay, the video game industry is upset that kids cannot buy. They're just saying kids can't go buy the game. The adults can go buy the game and give it to the kids, okay? But they're just saying they don't want kids playing Soldier of Fortune and, you know, these crazy violent video games. Now, we're talking about minors here, okay? Like minors. So the minor can't go in and buy it without the parents' consent. So I can kind of, watching some of these games, you know, some of the games are pretty rough, man. Like, some of the games are pretty savage, and they're pretty immersive. So, you know, I don't know, maybe there might be something to this law. I mean, I'm not saying they can't have them, they're just saying, you know, you can't have violent sales going to children. But by the same token, I mean, that's one argument. On the other side, it's a fucking game, okay? It's just a fucking game. And is this any difference from the Tipper sticker? You know, people singing rap songs and all the rest of it. You know, it's a pretty touchy subject. The trade group, Entertainment Software Association, intends to file a lawsuit to strike down a law. We are all confident, and we are confident we will prevail. President Douglas Lowenstein said in a statement on Monday. Lowenstein. Schwarzenegger said, "The California measure, Schwarzenegger signed the California measure into law last week. It faces an uncertain fate. Federal courts have ruled against similar legislation in Washington State, the city of Indianapolis, and St. Louis County in Missouri, finding laws violate free speech guarantees in the U.S. Constitution." So at least the U.S. Constitution is good for something these days. "The certainty of a constitutional challenge makes this a hollow gesture." Jeff Brown, spokesman for Electronic Arts Incorporated, the world's biggest video game company, said of Schwarzenegger's move. "The legislation bars the sale and rental to minors of games that show such things as killing, maiming, or sexual assault of a character depicted as human, which is determined to be especially heinous, atrocious, or cruel. Violators are subject to a $1,000 fine." So if you kill aliens, that's fine. Kill robots, that's fine. But you just can't kill people. Animals, not a problem. You know, you want to run virtual slaughterhouse, go right ahead. But you just can't, you know, be blowing away people. Passed by the California legislature last month and due to take effect on January 1, the new measure follows heated national debate after game publisher Take-Two Interactive Software Incorporated pulled its blockbuster game Grand Theft Auto San Andreas from retail shelves this summer because of hidden sex scenes. No, that's not true. They were hidden sex scenes, but the hidden sex scenes, you have to actually download a code to unlock them, blah, 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 blah. As a new version of the game, minus the disabled content that started the flap, is back on the store shelves. So I guess the hot coffee mod is no longer able to work on that game anymore. And, you know, I guess, is that good? Is that bad? I think it's largely just political. Who cares? So, do we want this law? Do we want a law in place like that? Do we want a law that says, hey, you know what? You're a child. You know, you can't really do this. I mean, when you look at these games, it cannot be denied that these games are violent. You cannot deny that. But that said, I mean, we have a rating system for movies, right? I mean, would you want kids to go in and watch, you know, House of a Thousand Corpses or, I don't know, more violent films like RoboCop and stuff like that? Would you want that? Would you want, you know, some 12-year-old in there getting all shell-shocked from these movies? Some people would say, oh, it doesn't affect... It does affect the kids. It does. Whether or not it's a good, you know, or a bad thing, or... But, I mean, any movie you see does affect you. Come on, let's be real here. Cut the shit. So it's something to look at, something to think about. Now, I have got a seriously disturbing piece of news for you here about Warcraft. It seems that Warcraft, World of Warcraft, is in fact spyware. This is from this guy's blog who reverse engineered this thing, but I'm going to go through it because this is very, very important because there's a lot of people who play World of Warcraft, especially maybe you listen to the show. You should be aware of this. I'm reading from the article now. I recently performed a rather long reversing session on a piece of software written by Blizzard Entertainment. Yes, the ones who made Warcraft and World of Warcraft, which has 4.5 million plus players now, apparently. This software is known as the Warden client. It's written like a shellcode in the position of an independent. It's downloaded on the fly from Blizzard servers, and it runs about every 15 seconds. It is one of the most interesting pieces of spyware to date because it's designed only to verify compliance with the EULA/TOS. Here is what it does. About every 15 seconds, up to about 4.5 million people, 500,000 of which are logged on at any given time. Here's what it does every 15 seconds. The Warden dumps all of the DLLs using the Tool Help API call. It reads information from every DLL loaded in the World of Warcraft executable process space. No big deal. The Warden then uses the getWindowTextA function to read the window text in the title bars of every window. These windows that are not in the WoW process, but any running program used on your computer. Again, that's now a big deal because it does it not just anything in the World of Warcraft process, but it looks at the text and every window, it reads read the window text in the title bar of every window on the computer. That is a big deal. I watched the Warden sniff down the email addresses of people I was communicating with on MSN, the URL of several websites that I had open at the time, the names of all my running programs, including those that were minimized in the toolbar. These strings can easily contain social security numbers or credit card numbers. For example, if I have Microsoft Excel or QuickBooks open with my personal finances at the time. This is all what's happening with everyone with World of Warcraft. One of these strings are obtained and then passed through a hashing function and compared against the banning hashes. If you match something on their list, I suspect you will get banned. For example, if you have a window titled WoW Inmate, regardless of whether that window really does exist, it could result in a ban. If you can't believe it, make a dummy window that does nothing at all, but name it this, and then start World of Warcraft. So there's a way to. So what you do is you have a window titled WOW apostrophe mark inmate, and start up World of Warcraft, and you'll find that you'll get banned. It certainly will result in a warden reporting you as a cheater. I really believe that reading these Windows titles violates privacy, considering Windows titles containing a lot of personal data. But we already know Blizzard Entertainment is fierce from a legal perspective. Look at what they've done to people who tried to make the BNetD, FreeCraft, or third-party World of Warcraft servers. Next, Warden opens every process running on your computer. When each program is open, the Warden calls the read process memory and reads a series of addresses, usually in 40 to 41 range. This is the range that most executable programs or windows will place their code. Warden's reads about 10 to 20 bytes from each test, and again hashes and compares this against a list of banned hashes. These tests are clearly designed to detect known third-party programs such as WoWGlider and Friends. Every process is read from in this way. I watch Warden open and read my email program and even my PGP key manager. Again, I feel this is a fairly severe violation of privacy. Well, what can you do about it? It would be very easy to devise a test where the Warden clearly reads confidential personal information without regard. This behavior places the Warden client squarely in the category of spyware. What is interesting about this is that it might be the first use of spyware to verify compliance with the EULA. I cannot imagine that such a practice will be legal in the future, but right now, in terms of law, this is the Wild Wild West. You can't blame Blizz for trying, as well as any other company, but this practice will have to stop if we hope to have any hope of privacy. Agree with botting or game cheaters or not, this is a much larger issue called privacy, and Blizz has no right to be opening my Excel or PGP programs for whatever reason. And this is very important stuff. I mean, this is a game world. This is one of the reasons why I'm really afraid of massive multiplayer online role-playing, because you have no control of what's going on there. It's very twisted, very bizarre, and you don't know what the hell is going on. It's twisted. You know, and the more you get involved... Now, I was looking at... There's all sorts of other ones, too, like Second Life and all this kind of jazz that you pay subscription services to, but you're paying a monthly fee to get your crack. And it's, you know, clearly they have access to your computers while you do this. This is not a good thing. So, you know, the only thing I would do here is I would just recommend that people just get off World of Warcraft. But, of course, World of Warcraft is crack. And everybody, you know, wants to, you know, try to quit crack, but crack is addictive, so therefore they have a hard time doing it. This is a problem that we have to try to deal with. I'm luckily been able to avoid the MMORG world, luckily. Otherwise, you know, I'd be sucked in and you'd never ever see me again. But it is something to look at and to think about and go, well, you know, clearly, if this is the spyware we've discovered, how much spyware is going on that we don't know about? Now, here's a weird one. How about computers making you stupid? In Computers Make You Stupid News, Thomas Edison was a great inventor, but a lousy prognosticator, whatever that means, when he proclaimed in 1922 that the motion picture would replace textbooks in schools, he began a long string of spectacularly wrong predictions in regarding the capacity of various technologies to revolutionize teaching. To date, none of them, from film to television, have lived up to the hype. But that's not film or television's fault. That's how they've been implemented. Okay, television could easily replace a lot of things, but people are scared to implement technology to its fullest. This is the Luddite concept. Most were quickly regulated into the audiovisual closet. Again, do you see that they're regulations? Even the computer, which is now a standard feature in most classrooms, has not been able to show a consistent record of improving education because they're not utilizing the technology properly. There have been no advances in the past decade that can be confidently attributed to the broader access to computers. Okay, now, this guy needs to take a good solid look at Marshall McLuhan. Okay, using a television as a teaching aid is like using an x-ray machine as a space heater. Okay, that's a direct quote from Marshall McLuhan. Anyone needs to read his book, Understanding Media, and check out how this works. This guy is completely talking out his ass here. And Stanford University professor of education, Larry Cuban, in 2001, summarized the existing research on educational computing. The link between test score improvements and computer ability to use and computer ability and use is even more contested. Part of the problem, Cuban pointed out, is that many computers simply go unused in the classroom. Yes, it's implication. It's not being utilized properly. But more recent research, including a University of Munich study of 174,000 students in 31 countries, indicated that students who frequently use computers perform worse academically than those who use them rarely or not at all. I wonder if your method of testing has anything to do with that. But that's okay. That's okay. Whether or not these assessments are the last word, it is clear the computer has not fulfilled the promises made for it. Now, that's great. First, they hold the thing back. They hold the technology back. They don't utilize the technology properly. And then they blame the technology. It is a poor carpenter who blames his fucking tools. Promoters of instructional technology have reverted to a much more modest claim that the computer is just another tool. It's what you do with it that counts. Yes, but it's not just another tool. It's not being utilized properly. But this response ignores the ecological impact of technologies. Far from being neutral, they reconstitute all of the relationships in an environment, some for better, some for worse. Installing a computer lab in a school may mean that students have access to information they would never be able to get in any other way, but also means that children spend less time engaged in outdoor play, and the art supply budget has to be cut. The art supply budget has to be... No, it doesn't. You just choose to cut the art supply budget. New security measures have to be employed. No, they don't. You choose that. And acceptable use agreements are needed to inform parents for the first time in American educational history that the school is not responsible for the material child encounters while under its supervision. This is, in fact, the vilification of computers. Wow. Isn't this amazing? My child doesn't use computers. He's allowed to watch all the TV he wants, but my child is not allowed to use a computer. The just a tool argument also ignores the fact that whenever we choose one learning activity over another, we are deciding what kinds of encounters with the world we value for our children. what, which in turn influences what they grow up to value. You're making some wild speculation in this article, Shitpump. Computers tend to promote and support certain kinds of learning experiences and devalue others. As technology critic Neil Postman has observed, what we need to consider about computers has nothing to do with its efficiency as a teaching tool. We need to know in what ways it is altering our conception of learning. This is pure FUD. This is completely Luddite bullshit. If we look through that lens, I think we will see that educational computing is neither a revolution nor a passing fad, but a Faustian bargain. Good God. Children gain unprecedented power to control their external world. Really? But at the cost of internal growth. You know, think of the children. During the two decades that I taught young people with and about digital technology, came to realize the power of computers can lead children into a deadened, alienated, and manipulative relationship with the world. That children's increasingly pervasive use of computers jeopardizes their ability to belong to a fully human and biological communities. Like, holy, yeah, all right then, so we should just turn the computers off and, you know, just abandon the whole learning evolution process because it's stupid, right? Ultimately, jeopardizing the communities themselves. Let me just go over that last sentence again. I came to realize that the power of computers can lead children into deadened, alienated, and manipulative relationships with the world, and that children's increasingly pervasive use of computers jeopardize their ability to belong. Their ability to belong fully to human biological communities, ultimately jeopardizing the communities themselves. So what does that mean? That they're going to, you know, look at stuff online and then destroy the community? Or because all these kids don't really want to be part of your community and be brainwashed by you? See, what they're saying here is that they don't want children to have control of what goes into their own heads. That's what's going on here. And so, you know, well, they're not, what's the big fucking deal with biological communities anyway? Okay, realistically, does any of this family shit count for anything whatsoever? Now, of course, there is a certain use to having family, community, all that kind of jazz, but it could be argued that a lot of young people do not have community because their families are bags of shit, so they turn to the computer to develop a community and they receive that help. But I suppose what they'd rather have is people, you know, drinking, being alcoholic, committing suicide because they have no one to talk to or to deal with or to express their, you know, emotions. This is saying essentially that the entire Rant Media community, everything that Rant does, is nothing more than a deranged misfit thing. But obviously we all need to go for blood tests so that we can get on the proper medication so that we don't need to talk to each other anymore. Because quite clearly, this is all evil. You bunch of Luddite bastards, what is going to happen when cyborgs start hitting the market? This is the beginning of, what would you call them, techno-racists? Is that what you'd call it? I mean, what would you call someone who's against somebody because they are, you know, technologically advanced or they've chosen to advance themselves? I'd like to sit this guy in a room full of transhumanists and see him get ripped into tiny pieces of shit. And speaking of being ripped into tiny pieces of shit, let's talk about some piracy, some real piracy. And this is kind of stuff that nobody's really talking about, and they should be talking about it most definitely, because this is a major big deal. In Somalia, remember Somalia? Somalia was that place where the Canadian Airborne Regiment went, and everyone was like, oh my God, oh my God, they beat up some people in Somalia. So we better disband the entire Airborne Regiment because, you know, they were beating up people in Somalia. You know, these people, we caught some thieves, the Airborne Regiment fucked them up, and now, you know, we have to disband them. So they did. They disbanded the Canadian Airborne Regiment, one of the most decorated regiments in all of Canadian history, and they disbanded. Of course, this was merely a scam. They did this purely to cover cost. And they couldn't just disband a decorated airborne regiment without having a scandal. So they cooked up this scandal, added some hazing rituals in there. And if you ever get a chance to watch the hazing movies, they're pretty tame when you compare them to, say, the British hazing movies. But that's okay. We won't go into that. But apparently, since they disbanded the airborne, what's happening now in the sunny Republic of Somalia? Well, it seems that Somali pirates have hijacked a ship with its 10-member crew on its way to the Somali port of El Man. The MV Torgolo was carrying fuel and food to a UN-chartered vessel freed last week by gunmen who had it held and its cargo for food aid for 3 months. So they had Food aid, hell. This is food aid going to the UN, which was captured and has been held for 3 months. Food aid. Okay, so you got 90 days of people starving, okay, because they're not getting food aid. Why wasn't the Somali government doing something about this? Oh, read on. The ship's owner said he was shocked by the most recent hijacking, which took place on Sunday. The International Maritime Board says there have been at least 20 attacks on ships in Somali waters since March. It urges ships in the area to stay as far away as possible from the shore. Somalia has no functioning national government and has not had a functioning national government since 1991. And the country has been divided into fiefdoms run by rival warlords. Look at that. Well, there's no national government, so I guess it's anarchy down there, right? So since there's anarchy, it should be all fine and dandy, right? Mobile Digit? Shouldn't it be really nice there? I mean, there's no functioning government. It's anarchy. Oh, but it's been divided into fiefdoms run by rival warlords. That's what happens when you have no national government. This is what occurs. This is reality. Not bookwork. This is what goes on in the real fucking world. Karim Kudrati of the Kenya-based Motaku Shipping Agency said the Sri Lanka captain and the 9 Kenyan crew members have volunteered to make the trip. I'm surprised these people are doing this, and especially in the holy month of Ramadan. I think we have to withdraw from this service, he told the Kenyan television. The MV Semolo was finally released last week in a deal brokered between the pirates and the Somali businessmen with its rice cargo intended for Somali victims of the Indian Ocean tsunami intact. So they let the ship go intact. It had run out of fuel and was waiting in Elman for supplies before returning to Mombasa in Kenya. Authorities at the port said the pirates were not paid and released the Semolo unconditionally. So that's interesting. So why did they release the Semolo? That's the big question here. Why did they release it? Oh, they weren't paid. Yeah, they were. Of course they were. Don't ever shit yourself. Why? The pirates don't give a damn. They could not care less. So why did they release this perfectly good ship that was within their control? I'll tell you why. Because they got paid off. And that's what happens when there is no ruling body. If you do not have a ruling body, okay, you run into a warlord state. You get shit like this. Let's look at history. Let's look at the world. Take our noses out of our ass and go, okay, you know what? Here's the way the world is. People equals shit. There's lots of good ideals, lots of good people, and I wish it could go the other way, but clearly it cannot, because we have the real world to look at and draw our conclusions from. Thanks for calling. Nothing wrong against Mobile Digit. Me and Mobile have got this thing. He sends me all these wonderfully, you know, book reports and stuff like that done by people who have never actually been in the real world talking about how anarchy could work. But it cannot. Thanks for coming out. Now, in nuke war news, British Intelligence Department has specified more than 350 companies and universities, departments, and government organizations in Middle East Asian countries are seeking for obtaining technology or equipment for making mass destruction weapons. So the British intelligence has found 350 companies doing research for mass destruction, weapons of mass destruction. The Guardian, a British newspaper, stated that a confidential report prepared on behalf of the British Counter-Espionage Department, MI5, so James Bond guys, the Military Intelligence Department, has disclosed the size of the weapons market on the international level. The newspaper clarified that the purpose of this report, which refers to the Pakistani embassy in London, as one of the organizations that aim at obtaining nuclear equipment or information, is prohibiting British companies from encouraging the mistake of spreading weapons. So don't give the people in the Middle East nukes, because clearly they're trying to kill everybody. Essentially what the report is saying. The report, which carries the title Companies and Organizations Concerned About Spreading Weapons, considers that the weapons market is bigger than believed. Of course it is. It warned against the exportation operations to organizations in Iran, Pakistan, India, Israel, Syria, and Egypt, and big companies in the United Arab Emirates, which appeared to be the springboard for this trade. Aha, the United Arab Emirates. The report, which consists of 17 pages, stated, "We are only referring to the companies and organizations included on the list which have violated British laws." It noted that these companies have sold equipment and/or technology for programs of mass destruction weapons. The report listed 114 companies in Iran, 114 companies in Iran, including chemical and petrochemical companies and medicine universities, which have obtained nuclear, chemical, and biological technology or technologically related to missiles. The report also referred to the nuclear ambitions of Egypt and Syria, considering that a private Egyptian chemical company has obtained technology used in nuclear weapons programs. On the other hand, the Syrian Atomic Energy Committee is facing a similar charge. The list included 11 Israeli organizations, in addition to the 73 Indian institutions which are involved in mass destruction programs. All of these, you know, one thing you'll find in all of these countries here, what do all of these countries have? Iran, Pakistan, India, Israel, Syria, Egypt, and most of the United Arab Emirates. What do they all have in common? That's right, it's Mud Hut Central. Everything is being run by religious convictions, and this is what scares the shit out of me. Okay, we need to get a handle on the whole religious aspect, because if we don't get a handle on them before they get handles on nukes, the rest of us, you know, great white hedonists over here, are all going to wind up getting our asses nuked. That's exactly what's going to happen. Okay? Sorry, but it's the truth. Look at what... People go, no, you're spreading fear and uncertainty. Okay, let's look at the Quran. Let's look at the Bible, and let's look at the Torah, and see what they say. What do the holy texts actually say to do with people who will not convert to the religion? I'm not even going to go there, but what does it say? What does the Torah say to do to Gentiles? What does the Quran say to do with the, I guess what they call them, infidels, people who aren't Muslim? And what does the Bible say to do with heathens? What does it say? Right there, black and white, guys. I mean, there's too many people in the world to stone, so I'm guessing that kind of narrows it down, you know? Today's daily hack, hopefully, will be helpful, sent in by Vulgan, is a piece of software called QNext. It's a WOG network creation tool, very cool, make sure you check it out. Do a little research on it, looks pretty neat. And that's all I got for you today, but don't worry, I will be back tomorrow to make sure you get all the information you need to stay alive. This would be a free radio broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of 71 people, 56 continuing subscribers from last month, plus 3 new subscribers, plus 12 one-time donations. And if you would like to help keep this daily news broadcast on the air, please visit rantmedia.ca and click on the donate tab. Digital baptisms today, Brandon the Great is now known as Velociraptor, like Velociraptor, only it's Velociraptor, like High Velocity Raptor. I like that one, Velociraptor. And thanks again to everyone and their assistance in gathering data. If you have access to sensitive information or any of the pertinent stories, please email them to Newsreel, that's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, at rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, be sure to pick up the album by Toy White Lights. And I'm going to leave you now with a track by the Revolting Cox called Beers, Steers, and Queers. So until tomorrow, that's what Server said. End of line.
Now let's you just drop them pants.
Drop?
Just take them right off.
Come on, squee up. Squee up.
What?
Come on, squeal, squeal.
Laws are tough.
You just drop them pants.
City boy, ain't you?